As I talked about in the lesson, which ended up being about 45 minutes long, I think I set a record with that one, that there's a good range of number of models available for doing the, for using as an acceleration factor. And depending on the particular failure mechanism, some models may apply, and maybe you're lucky and a particular model applies. But let's take a look at a couple of those models and see and discuss some of the caveats and how to use them to good effect. The first one's that Arrhenius model. Now, I've mentioned it before, I'm sure, a couple of times, and you should be familiar with this form. It's the exponent raised to E sub A is the activation energy, and K is Boltzmann's constant. And I'll add notes into the formula glossary or into this lesson with these definitions filled out and with examples. Now there's temperature. So, get my pen. So I'm going to say activation Boltzmann. And these are temperatures in Kelvin. So absolute scale. And I think it's, I'll need to look this up, but I believe it's 273 degrees above Celsius is a fixed rate. And so you'll see numbers like 300 or up to 400 or 250, things like that in the range that we normally deal with products. But the operating or use is the other thing you'll see here is the subscript. And then stress, usually the higher stress level. And so I take the inverse Kelvins, take the separation of those. It's times the activation energy divided by Boltzmann's constant. An exponent and gives me the acceleration factor. Now, activation energy. This is absolutely critical. It's usually very dangerous just to assume a value. It will range in values from 0.01 up to say 1.5 electron volts. And it's highly dependent on the material and on the particular failure mechanism. So some silicon, like time domain dielectric breakdown, TDDB, I think is the name of the failure mechanism, has a relatively low activation energy, if I remember correctly. A solder has an activation energy of about 0.9 many times, but it can vary depending on the solder system you're dealing with. It's common for people to use 0.7 active electron volts. And I'm not exactly sure why. There's not a preponderance of failure mechanisms and generic failure mechanisms that have an activation of 0.7. It's convenient because a change in temperature of 10 degrees, if you increase the stress by 10 degrees Kelvin or 10 degrees C, it doubles the acceleration factor. But it's only an interesting mathematical phenomenon. It has to be connected to your failure mechanism. When I worked on the polymer-based oxidation process, that we knew that was the chemical reaction going on. We had plenty of other evidence for that. I went to a chemist and asked them for, well, what's the chemical reaction that is actually occurring to cause this polymer to break down? And what's the activation energy for that specific polymer chemical reaction? And then I ran enough testing that I was able to confirm that what I was seeing in the testing was consistent with what the chemist said that chemical reaction's activation energy was about. And a quick reminder is activation energy has to deal with this energy well, if you remember some of your chemistry. So this is in the scale of electron volts, and this is my activation energy It's usually stated in terms of activation energy. So if I have a molecule or a chemical, an atom, for example, I'm trying to think of the right term, and that I want to break it free from a molecule. So it may be attached to a chain of polymer molecules, since I had carbon and oxygen and nitrogen and a bunch of other things in these polymer strands. But in order to break down the polymer, an oxygen atom had to separate from the chain, had to break its bonds. Now those bonds had some resistive force to them that they didn't want to separate. So you had to apply a certain amount of energy, this activation energy, that allowed it to come out of its hold, essentially. So think of it as the activation energy is how much energy it takes to cause a chemical reaction to occur, either to create a bond or to separate a bond. And so that's what this number is about. And that's why it's so important to tie it to the actual chemical process that you're dealing with. So items like corrosion and migration and chain scissioning in polymer all have activation energies. And so do many, many other phenomena. It's a matter of, though, of applying the appropriate activation energy to describe your failure mechanism. The other piece to keep in mind is that these are in Kelvin, the temperatures, and it's Boltzmann's constant. And just do the due diligence to make sure you're in the same units for the appropriate units for all of these terms, and you can apply this model. But basically, it's given me the acceleration factor for a specific failure mechanism for a change in stress. So I want to translate from my stress conditions to my use conditions. And that's the ratio that ends up being my acceleration factor. So if I failed in 100 days under stress, it's times the acceleration factor, that 100 days, time 100 days times the acceleration factor to find how many days before failures in the use conditions. That's how we use it. Oftentimes, though, we'll have a Weibull distribution or a lognormal or some distribution of time to failures at stress, and then that entire distribution gets shifted by the acceleration factor value to give us a distribution of use conditions, of time to failure at use conditions. So a couple things to keep in mind when you are invoking the Arrhenius model. Now, Ehring model is a pretty nice form for multiple stresses. And so it allows us to multiply together the acceleration factor contribution from different stresses. So some things like dielectric breakdown is a function of both the voltage being applied and of the temperature. It's similar to an activation energy type of chemical reaction, but with increased changes in voltage, then it changes, it has a different phenomena. It's independent to some degree from temperature. There is some relationship, but this model holds in most use conditions and over most of our stress conditions too. So I can cause a failure just at room temperature by increasing enough voltage, but I can also cause failures by just increasing the temperature with some modest amount of voltage. But I need both. I need a voltage, and it needs to be above absolute zero. And so this allows us, and this is used with capacitors, looking at dielectric breakdown. And so what you need is this N, which is the exponent for the voltage part of the acceleration factor, and an activation energy. Those are dependent on the type of dielectric that you're actually trying to break down. Oftentimes, this is determined empirically by running tests at different voltages and at different types of dielectric, and we back out these values. And there's tables, and some of the references and books have these values, so you can use it going forward if it's the same or similar enough system that you're working with. But the idea with Ehring model is that I can have voltage and temperature. I could have humidity and temperature. I could have voltage, humidity, and temperature, and so on. But it allows us to combine different stresses, but really if they're independent, if there's not a big interaction term. Now, of course, some models may include that interaction term, and it just adds just another term to the Ehring model. So there's a number of different forms that this model can take, depending on the types of stresses that you're applying. Now, there's lots and lots of other models. There's Black's equation, Peck's equation we talked about earlier. And then there's hundreds and hundreds of physics of failure models. And a great place to look is at, it's called WARP, WARP, which I don't know what it's if it stands for anything. But it was part of RIAC, which now has a new name. And I'll try tracking down the link and adding it to the notes. But it gives you a list of previous literature that's providing the models that describe failure mechanisms. And it's from those models that, one, you can get some ideas of how to accelerate a failure mechanism if you need to, but also it may provide the model you need in order to interpret an accelerated test. Now, ALT is I'd say it's fun. It adds the levels of statistics, it gets into the material science elements of our products, and it is immensely useful for making business decisions. Answering that question is, will this product last long enough? So it's something as a reliability engineer I hope you get to enjoy and get challenged with setting up and running effective ALTs. Next, we'll just go break things, and I like calling it discovery testing.